The U.S. healthcare system has been criticized and politicized for years. I think we've all experienced some frustration in the area of healthcare, from cost of insurance, lengthy waits for procedures, to insurance companies not covering treatments, cost-prohibitive medicine. While tonight's guest maybe doesn't have all the solutions, he's got some great views and suggestions on how change can happen and how it might happen in the future. Steve Bonner has been actively involved in the business of healthcare for 25 years. He was a CEO of Cancer Treatment Centers of America for 15 years and has been on the board for 20 years. He was named one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare by Modern Healthcare magazine. He's taught MBA students and served as an entrepreneur in residence at the Harvard Business School, and he's currently an advisor to four private equity firms, also advisor to EIT Health, a healthcare innovation organization created and funded by the European Union. Welcome to the show, Steve. I'm glad to have you on.
Thank you, Karen. It's great to be with you.
It's one of the topics that I hear so much about, with frustration with listeners who have problems with health coverage and navigating the system. You're very aware of how we stand in relation to other countries. Are there other countries who are doing healthcare better, and how and what countries?
Sure, I think so. And first, I just would point out that the challenge we face in America is a challenge that's shared by every country in the world, because people are living longer, they're living less healthy lives, so they have cardiac problems and diabetes and so forth. So the demand for health care is increasing faster than we're able to keep up with it. And I think a couple of the best countries that I've had a chance to see are probably Singapore and Switzerland. And they'll be hard to emulate, but there's a lot to learn from them.
And what are some of the things that you see in the healthcare systems that are working? And again, the political systems are very different, and their whole societies are very different than ours. So maybe what works there might not work here. But what are some of the things that you see that you like?
Right, for sure. The things that work well are that, to me, they're always a very nimble, integrated partnership among public, the government, private providers, and the consumers. And they work to be clear about what a patient's options are over the lifetime, and then to help them create sources of funds and control sources of funds that they can use to navigate their own health care. And then the providers in Singapore and in Switzerland, for example, work very hard to provide what the consumers want. And the consumers there play a significant role in navigating health care, deciding what they want. They might want the very most expensive care, they might want less expensive care, and they have that choice in both of those countries. They also work hard basically to pay as you go, either the government's share, an employer's share, or the consumer's share. So they're not building these huge unfunded future liabilities, which is one part of the big problem that we've got facing us in the U.S.
Briefly, we had a conversation before this about the history of healthcare in our country and how we sort of got away from consumers making the decisions that maybe they should be making. And that is the fact that employers generally are the big providers of healthcare for citizens in this country.
Right.
And exactly. How has that happened? How has that evolved? And how has that changed the way we as consumers are permitted to make decisions about health care?
Prior to World War II, health care was very much like every other consumer-oriented industry in the U.S. And you navigated the care that you wanted. You may have insurance or you may not have insurance. But during World War II, with all the labor force being off in war, the employers were looking for a way to compete with each other. And there were wage price freezes. They couldn't just spiral wages up. So they came up with the idea of offering family health care as a way to get workers. And we've now evolved to where the employer has been very dominant in designing health care and deciding what health care each family is going to get, then to wiring it into some network. So they have to go there for their care and also paying for their care. And so the consumer has had very little reason and very little opportunity to play the role that they play in every other industry in this country.
And do you think, in your opinion, from what you know and see, are consumers able to navigate this? Are they able to buy insurance? Are they able to make decisions? It's a complicated system. Are they able to do it, and should they be doing it?
Yes, and that's part of the great excitement for me and what's going on in healthcare. And we may talk about Obamacare in a couple of minutes.
I would like to talk about that.
But one of the best things that I think Obamacare did was that it re-engaged the consumer into their healthcare, because without intending it, Obamacare started to increase co-pays and deductibles. So all of a sudden, the consumer is required to pay up front for the initial costs of their care. And as consumers in America, we're used to doing that. We're not used to doing it in healthcare. But when we do that, all of a sudden we say, wait a minute, now I want to understand what this is. What are you recommending to me?
What am I paying for?
What am I paying for?
Right,
exactly. And the system is not taken the responsibility to provide that kind of information to consumers before a decision is made. But we now have, all of us, regardless of where we are in the age spectrum, we're much more nimble at getting information, analyzing our information, making our decisions, implementing it, and being accountable for it. And so you've got all these, especially early consumers, younger consumers,
yeah,
coming into healthcare and saying, wait a minute, where's my information? And if you can't even give me the basic information, quality, cost, motivation, outcomes, you don't get my business. I'll go somewhere else.
So the millennials are going to be teaching us something, perhaps.
Oh, they are. Because
yeah, they do. They love their information. Whether they're buying a car or going out to dinner, they seem to know all of the facts by getting onto their little phone and finding out what they need to know.
Right. But even us near centennials are navigating information and making,
sure,
decisions very differently than we were 10 or 15 years ago.
Let's talk about Obamacare. I heard you describe yourself as a fiscal conservative and a social moderate. So that said, because I don't want to get politicize this, do you believe that how is the politicization of healthcare adversely impacted healthcare in the United States? Because we all know Obamacare is bad, according to some Republicans. Obamacare is the greatest thing in the world, according to some Democrats. And I don't think most people even know what it does.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yes, it's totally politicized. And if you try to have a healthcare conversation in a political environment, one side goes one way, the other side goes the other way, and you're left with nothing. And that's basically where we've gotten to with healthcare, at least at the moment. Now, Obamacare, in my opinion, like almost everything else that the legislature does, is neither good or bad. It's a blend of both. And there are some very good things about Obamacare.
Well, so let's tell, what are some of the things that you think are good and some of the things that might need to be worked on?
So the very best thing about Obamacare, I think, is that as a country, we looked in the mirror and we said, somehow we're going to find a way to provide every American with access to quality health care at a reasonable price. And I just think that's so American, and it was long overdue for us to say that. And however we got it done politically, that's at the core of Obamacare. And that's worthy of preserving. It isn't perfect. I think that in addition to that, we tackled the pre-existing condition exclusion, which is insurance company fiction, in my opinion. We all have pre-existing conditions, just a question of, you know, what are they willing to put inside the circle and outside the circle. So we've done away with that, and I think that's great. You can underwrite it. It's fine. It's done. The insurance industry still survives several,
yep,
years later. You know, we're fine with that. I've also talked about the fact that it's re-engaged the consumer into the front end of healthcare and has asked them or told them or required them to pay for some things up front, and as a result to behave like consumers and teach this industry what they're expected to provide.
Let's talk, when we come back, a little bit about innovations that you have seen in the whole process. I know you're working on some things with your investors, and I want to talk about those. And then I want to end up talking a little bit about some practical advice for our listeners about how to navigate the system. I'm here with Steve Bonner, and this is the WGN Karen Conti Show. With Steve Bonner, we're talking about healthcare. He was the CEO of Cancer Treatment Centers of America for 15 years. He was named one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare by Modern Healthcare Magazine. Steve, we got a couple texts, and I'm going to kind of break them down as fast as I can here. Did they want to know, does the expert think it's a good step to get ahead of conditions as opposed to treating conditions when they first manifest themselves? And I take it that is in the context of insurance, or, you know, so that there should be an encouragement of of treating general health as opposed to treating the disease once there's onset.
Yeah, well, I think that...
Oops, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Here I am.
Here you are. You lost your voice for a minute. No, I lost your voice. Right. Go ahead.
I think that underlying the whole challenge that we have in healthcare is that as individuals, we have to find ways to live healthier lives and stay healthy longer rather than waiting to deal with healthcare once we're sick. And so anything that we can do within the healthcare system to change our behaviors, encourage us, incent us, reward us for making sure that we stay healthy as long as we can, when we have a problem, find it as quickly as we can, and solve it before it becomes extreme.
There was just an article in the paper this week. UnitedHealthcare was blasted by a judge. I'm not going to go into the details, but apparently UnitedHealthcare was denying certain types of cancer treatment to certain people, and the judge's comments were widely shared among patients and doctors who kind of felt that this large insurance company was wrongfully denying coverage to people who really needed it for things that were not experimental, although they, I believe, claim they were experimental. What do you see as the solution to that? I mean, that's a big problem where I hear this all the time. My listeners will send me emails that heartfelt. I need to get this and I can't get it because I can't afford it and I can't sue my insurance company. How is this resolved?
It's a multifaceted solution, but the beginning of it is that the insurance companies and the government have to think differently about approving new therapies. And we've lived for a long time on basically requiring that any new therapy go through a 10-year study in order to be able to get approval and go into the market. And in the meantime, people are dying
right.
who would benefit from that when it's ultimately approved. And a lot of that is based on assumptions in the way our bodies work that now are disrupted, and we can be a lot smarter about now that we can map the genome. And we should be able to look at these things together with artificial intelligence and big data at a genetic cellular level and make much quicker decisions.
You have an example of that that we talked about. Can you give our listeners just a little bit of an example on how you figure out what kind of cancer is responsive to certain types of treatment?
Sure. I'm one company that I'm on the board of and an investor in. Is dealing with this very issue, which is if you and I both get pancreatic cancer, any treatment center we go to in the world is going to say we both have pancreatic cancer, so we should get the same treatment. And it'll work for one of us and it won't work for the other. Why is that? And it's because we're finding that even though we have a primary tumor in the same location, yours actually looks like a melanoma. It's not really a pancreatic cancer. And so we can look at that. And how can we assess all the drugs that are available and make sure you get the right drug? And we love to try to get enough tumor from a patient than to be able to test it against a variety of different drugs rather than just the one that's been approved by a 10-year study. The problem is getting enough of that tumor. And so the company that I'm working with has developed a specially bred immune-suppressed nude mouse. And they get as much tumor material as they can from a patient, and then they microsurgically implant it in exactly the same location in the mouse. And because the mouse has no immune system, the cells that it grows from that tumor are patient cells. They're not mouse cells. And we're getting 70% metastasis, rapid growth of these cells. And then we have enough so we can take a panel of drugs, go into the lab, and test these cells against a drug and select from that the drug that looks like the best match and is most effective against the tumor of the individual patient.
Well, and that sounds like fabulous technology. I mean, and like you said, you're narrowing down what is this cancer. You can call it, because it's in the pancreas, you can call it pancreatic cancer, but it might have a whole different development and a whole different set of treatments that might be effective.
Right. It's a very different character than the broad brush we've given by just saying, where did the tumor first appear?
Let's talk a little bit about some other innovations. There was one that I really liked was the idea of you go into a hospital and they want you to get an MRI or they want you to get some sort of treatment, and you have to wait to go to their clinic somewhere in the suburbs. Tell us what the innovations you're working on.
Yeah, so the one that I mean, the innovations in healthcare, and this is where the great excitement is. You've got the politicization of the conversation, so Congress isn't going to solve it. You've got the big oligopolies trying to defend their old ways, like you talk about United Healthcare refusing to approve new stuff. But in the meantime, the innovation that's going on at the grassroots level in healthcare right now is just incredible. And we can talk about innovation in distribution, how we get it to patients, technology, devices, drugs, legal regulatory reimbursement, et cetera. And the example that you're talking about relates to a company here in Chicago called Health Engine. And you go to your healthcare provider. They say you need an MRI. We have one for you 2 weeks from Thursday. Be there at 2 o'clock, and we're going to charge you $4,000 for your MRI, and your copay will be $4,500. You go home and you go on the Health Engine website and you say, I live in this zip code. I need an MRI. I'm willing to travel 20 miles. What have you got for me? And they can go into their database and find that there's a open MRI machine at a MRI specialty clinic a mile from your home. It's open this afternoon at 3 o'clock. If you'll take it, they'll do your MRI for you for $3,000 and your copay will be $300. And if you do that, you get your MRI results 2 weeks earlier, your worrying is reduced because you're going to worry for
right.
2 weeks.
That's the big thing, right?
Well, that's a big thing. And then you saved this money. And then if you go back to Health Engine and say, I've done that, they will go to your insurance company and say, Karen just saved you $1,000. Cut her a check for half of it.
Wow.
Let's change the way this whole market works and start connecting, you know, cost with value, with quality, with outcomes, with whatever it is the consumer wants.
It makes total sense, does it not?
It does. It's so rational.
And everybody's happy, and everybody's you know, it's an easy one for me. Let's talk a little bit about, for people who are navigating the healthcare system out there, and we have a lot of listeners who have health issues, and they're getting older, and they're navigating the system by themselves or with a loved one. What are some of the tips you can give them?
Well, I think the most important tip is to step out of all the old behaviors where you're led to believe that the only option you have is to do what you're told in a network in order to get your insurance to pay for it. And this is your life, it's your body, and it's your decision, and you should be in control of that. And yes, there can be a very heavy lifting on your part to get all the information, but you're also legitimate in looking eyeball to eyeball with a caregiver and asking why. Why? And what's going to happen? And what's the impact on me? And what are my options? What other options do I have? And I think working with our networks, our families, there's also a lot of conversation going on online with people that are dealing with the same kinds of issues. And you can find places where you can get yourself educated by somebody that doesn't have an interest in selling you something.
And one last question, and we have just a few minutes, just not even a minute. Crystal ball here. We're going to see a lot of changes coming up in the next 50 years. What are some of the changes? Can you bullet point for our listeners?
So I think that the themes that we've talked about are really going to flower. They're going to blossom. And the need for dramatic change in healthcare in the U.S. is undeniable. We're spending way too much money. People are too frustrated. The information is there. And so we're going to see much greater consumer control. We're going to see all of us as providers having to provide better information. We're going to use artificial intelligence, machine learning to get a lot smarter. The government, I think the FDA is already working harder to try to be more creative. The insurance companies are tough to bring along, but they're either going to be in the market or out of the market, and we're going to decide what that market is. I think that in addition, the huge opportunities that we have to understand how we manage our lives and to manage our lives more intelligently, from wearables to fitness centers, in employer situations or outside of employer situations, family support on these things. All of this, I think, is going to help us find ways to live healthier lives. And then when we have to navigate healthcare, to do it much more efficiently than we've been able to recently.
So we have something to look forward to in the healthcare field.
A lot to look forward to. It's our lives, right?
That's right. The most important thing. And we all know that. Steve Bonner, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you come back again and talk some more about some of the innovations that you're working on.
Love to.